Cohen & Company is delivered by TriStar Moving, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Boy, a lot should be said about the job John Hines has done. So I read an article on The Athletic. Pierre LeBrun writes an article about Hurricanes head coach Rod the Bod, Rod Brind'Amour. And the headline is, Rod Brind'Amour is the front runner for the Jack Adams Award, according to the NHL GM poll. So the GMs vote on the Vezina Trophy. They don't vote on the Jack Adams Award, which is Coach of the Year. And the broadcasters apparently vote on the Jack Adams Award. And so I'll be honest with everybody. I'm not following the rest of the league. I don't, you know, the North Division, I don't, why? So I'm not following the rest of the NHL right now. I'm following the Predators. I was following the Dallas Stars. I've been following that. And I will say, I think Rod Brind'Amour is a very, very good coach. And I think that's a big part of this series, which is Brind'Amour versus John Hines. But I keep thinking, is anybody going to give John Hines the respect due for the turnaround the Predators have had this season? So Pierre writes that he texted 28 NHL general managers who texted him back. I'm guessing he texted all of them, but only 28 texted back. Pierre writes, quote, in any case, I expect Joel Quenneville and Dean Evason, Florida Panthers and the Minnesota Wild. And Ian, you know how much I love Dean Evason.
He's, yeah, and they've actually had a pretty good year.
Oh, my goodness. When Paul Fenton left to go to Minnesota and he took Dean Evason with him, a little part of me died inside.
Yeah, it's like half a junior Preds. Well, I shouldn't say junior, but a bunch of the old Preds are on that roster, including coaches.
Oh, I just love Dean Evason. I just love him. And maybe it's because he came on our show during the Cup final run and had a great interview after all these dudes from Milwaukee, like Freddie Gaudreau and Colton Sissons, and everybody was going ham, and we had Dean Evason on. He seemed like a great guy. I just think he's a great coach. Anywho, Pierre writes, I expect Joel Quenneville and Dean Evason to get plenty of votes from the Broadcasters Association this year, given how surprising their respective teams have been. But I decided to seek out my own perspective in polling the NHL GMs on the Jack Adams Award. And yes, Quenneville and Evason were popular choices from the 28 general managers, but neither was the winner. Rod Brind'Amour got 17 first-place votes out of the 28 ballots cast and finished atop the poll, a true sign of respect for the work he's done not only this year with the Hurricanes contending for the first overall in the NHL standings, but I suspect for how he's brought Carolina's program along since he took over 3 years ago. Stop. Let me say this. First of all, what you did last year doesn't matter. Shouldn't matter as far as this award's concerned. Does John Hines not belong in the conversation? I mean, I have been as hard on John Hines as you can be at times. I mean, he really had to earn my respect. He really had to earn. I mean, we all know how much I thought Peter Laviolette was a great coach. So you bring somebody else in, that guy is going to have to prove to me not only that he can coach, he's going to have to prove to me that he was worth getting rid of Peter Laviolette for. And that's saying a lot. And I know, you know, people say, well, Laviolette wears out his welcome, and maybe Laviolette wore out his welcome here. I don't know. But anywho, they bring in this guy, and I'm like, what's he done? New Jersey, comes in here last year, and I know it was weird circumstances, but I was like, yeah. So let's see what John Hines can do. This team stunk. This team was lousy. They were terrible. He never got too high. He never got too low. John Hines, if anything was accomplished from this year, it's that John Hines can coach. Now, is he a great coach? I'm not going to go there. Is he the long-term answer for the Predators? I'm not going to totally go there yet, although I feel pretty good about it. But on this year's merits, how does John Hines not belong in the discussion for Coach of the Year? Is it that they felt like he underachieved at the beginning with the Predators roster? Because I remember when Adam Vingan wrote an article, and not that Adam Vingan is the end-all be-all of who decides who's a good coach or not, but considering that the award is voted on by the broadcasters, I'd say his opinion is somewhat, you know, reasonable to assume that it matters now. He wrote an article in February in which he said Scotty Bowman couldn't win with this roster. He asked John Hines, do you think you're getting the most out of the roster? Almost as a prelude to the fact that if there was a sympathy card to be played for John Hines, it was that, look at the roster John Hines was given. And I still believe that we should look at the roster John Hines was given. Now, they've played really well, and goaltending has certainly been a part of it. And I know there's a lot of talk about Saros and whether or not Saros should be in the Vezina category. Or I think it was Elliot Friedman talked today about Saros perhaps being in the Hart Trophy discussion. And Saros is certainly a lot of it. But when the Predators made their turnaround, UC Saros was hurt. They were running out Rym Pitlick, Matthew Olivier, Tanner Jeannot, Tyler Lewington, David Ferentz. They were running out guys that we had never heard of. Let's be honest. Michael McCarron was being run out on the ice at that point. And somehow, in a road trip that included Carolina, Tampa Bay, Florida, and Dallas, John Hines got this team from the bottom of the division and into the playoffs. And nobody, his name is not even in this entire Pierre LeBrun, in the entire Pierre article.
One more time.
Pierre LeBrun.
Thank you.
It's not even mentioned. His name is not even mentioned. In fact, here's the whole list from Pierre with all the GMs that he talked to. Number one, Rod Brendamore. Number two, Joel Quenneville. Number three, Dean Evason. Number four, Mike Sullivan. Number five, Peter DeBoer. Number six, Sheldon Keefe. Number seven, Bruce Cassidy. Number eight, Peter Laviolette. Number nine, Jared Bednar. Number 10, Dave Tippett. Nobody even mentioned John Hines. What am I missing? The Predators stunk. They were terrible. We spent a month going over trade possibilities and blowing it up and firing everybody. And oh my, are they going to trade Philip Forsberg? And John Hines doesn't even cry. And these are the general managers. He's texting the general managers. And not one of them. They put Jared Bednar on there. Guy's got a freaking stacked roster in Colorado. And not one general manager of the 28 who texted back put John Hines on the list. What am I missing? What is going on? I mean, well, can we have some respect for John Hines, please? And again, I've been very critical of John Hines over the last year. I was critical when they hired him. I asked critical questions when they hired him with him standing right there. I asked John Hines when they got booed off the ice what he thought about it. I have been very tough and very honest with John Hines. And to me, he should at least be in the top three. At least. Now, again, Brendamore is a damn good coach, so I don't want to take away anything they've done, and I haven't watched a ton of around-the-league hockey this year, so it's not fair for me to... But he's not even in the top 10? You're telling me John Hines' coaching job this year is not even top 10? Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Unfreaking believable. The guy from Toronto gets a vote? Freaking believable. Now that is some disrespect.
I think the most frustrating thing is people look at coach of the year and equate it to, okay, what teams are the best? But if you have a really good team and if you have a winning team, that is due to coaching, yes. But it's also because you probably have really, really, really good players. Carolina has really good players. And the Predators do as well. But John Hines was able to do what these other teams are doing with younger and less experienced, and if we're being honest, less talented players.
So, I mean,
and I think that's more impressive.
So, I don't think the Predators have a crap team. You know,
they don't.
I don't think they have a good team. Like, I certainly don't. But my opinions on the way this team was built and everything else have not changed through the winning. They have not. Now, my opinion on Hines is much, much higher because of the winning. But I don't get it. Somebody's got to help me out here. These are the general managers. And I know, again, the broadcasters vote on the award. And I know because I got laughed at every day by a general manager about how those people know so much more than all of us. And they don't even have John Hines in the top 10. Give me a break. That is not fair. That is not, and I'm not one, again, I think anybody who's listened to this show knows that I'm not Bobby Homer. You know, that I'm not going to sit there and be like, our guy needs to be number one and our guy is, you know, you all know me. You know, I don't care one bit. I really don't. Roman Josi won the Norris Trophy last year. Everybody was campaigning for it. I couldn't care less because the team was lousy and I was like, who cares? John Hines gets no votes amongst 28 NHL general managers. He doesn't get a single vote. You got to be kidding me. You've got to be kidding me. So apparently they asked David Poile about this. So we'll get to that next. 615-737-1025. But you got to be kidding me. And again, not the biggest, like, again, I don't have a John Hines jersey downstairs. I think everybody knows that. And he's not even the top 10. Unbelievable. 615-737-1025. We're live from the Whole Selling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com, Stillman & Company. And we'll get your thoughts on it as well. Stillman & Company, delivered by TriStar Moving. It's ESPN 1025, the game.
John, I'll start with this. We've been talking about this incredible turnaround. UC Saros, of course, being a big part of that. But for you as the head coach behind the bench, was there a moment for you where you thought, okay, here we go. Things are coming together now.
Yeah, there was. It was, you know, we went on a long road trip in the middle of March. And, you know, we kind of had a tough series prior going on to the trip. And then we had a couple meetings early in that road trip about certain things we need to do to be able to be successful to win, and getting more of a commitment from the guys to be able to do that. And, you know, I think it was in the middle of that trip where we played Tampa in Tampa, where you started to see, okay, if we get some traction here with this style of hockey, this commitment level throughout our lineup, you know, along with the goaltending we were getting, that we'd give ourselves a good opportunity to make a run here down the stretch.
That was John Hines on NHL Network, and it was about that road trip when he should have been garnering at least a top 10 consideration for Coach of the Year. And then when they made the playoffs, after how bad they were, nothing, according to Pierre LeBrun's research, which he pulled 28 of the league's general managers, not one vote, not one first, second, third, not one vote for John Hines amongst the league's coaches. Unfreaking believable. David Poile was on the midday show earlier this week. They asked him about John Hines and the Jack Adams Award. Here's what David Poile said.
How deserving, in your mind, do you think he is of some Jack Adams Awards votes?
Well, it's I, again, a little prejudice there, of course. I think he deserves a lot because it's based on a season-long award, and nobody has come from as far off the pace as we have. Nobody's had as many injuries. Nobody's used as many players. Nobody's used as many rookies. I know other teams have had it difficult too with this COVID and the pandemic, but if we got to compare apples to apples, I think our coaching staff has done as good a job, and John, as the head coach, is really, found his place in our organization, found his place with our players, and I think the buy-in has been is kind of proof of the pudding in terms of how we played in the second half of the season. So Pierre LeBrun sort of did a survey of, you know, one of those anonymous polls on who should be the coach of the year, and I think it was won by Rob Brendamore, who happens to be our competition, and they don't believe that John got any votes, and that's kind of disappointing to me. So let's continue this in the playoffs, and we can maybe change that narrative, because he's very deserving of some consideration based on the job he did this year for the Predators.
Okay, I'm glad David at least read the article. Text those other general managers and ask them what they're looking at. But I would agree with David. I mean, it's kind of tough, because I'm not trying to throw David under the bus here with what I'm about to say, but I didn't like this roster. I didn't. You know, early in the season, I didn't like the roster. I don't love the roster now. I really don't. There are a lot of holes that are covered up, in my opinion, by good goaltending and by a couple of elite defensemen and perhaps, you know, that grit of, hey, we're going to be ugly how we score kind of guys, which is kind of what they wanted on the offensive end. But I don't love this roster. I do not. This team was going nowhere, and they were going nowhere fast. And I just think that John Hines deserves more recognition. John Hines may lose this in the first round, and he may not make the playoffs next year and not make the playoffs the year after that and get fired. I'm not hoping for it. I'm just saying, like, okay. And then you'll look at his career as a coach, and it'll be 10 years of coaching and two real playoff appearances and bounce in the first round of the bubble series. And you'll say, okay, That was a rather unspectacular coaching career. Maybe. I don't know. But this year that man coached. He coached. And I just wish he'd get at least a little bit more love for it. As David said, very disappointing. Let's go to your phones. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Caroline, what's in the text line?
David said he is clearly in the discussion, but this team was not watchable in March.
They were not watchable in March.
Maybe he meant earlier than that, because they very much so were very watchable and fun to watch in March.
So I will put it to you like this, and I use everything normally in sports or normally in life. I'm able to base when things happened off of something around sports. So it's like somebody will say, I think it was 2016. I remember that you and I went to the zoo and it, no, that was 2018 because the Predators were playing the next day against so-and-so. That's how I remember things. The pandemic, I think, has shifted me the other way because there were no sports for 5 months. So I couldn't brace with anything with sports. So I went to Puerto Rico at the very beginning of March. And when I went, they sucked. They got beat at home by Carolina, embarrassed. Soros got hurt. Everybody was hurt. They're going on that long road trip. They got smoked on a Saturday night by Florida or a Saturday afternoon. And they were terrible. And that was like March 3rd or March 5th.
6th, and I think.
March 6th. And then everything else was turning it around after that. So March is when this team became watchable. March NFL free agency was the Tampa Bay game in which I think turned everything around. When Pecorine was absolutely fantastic. I think he stopped something like 38 of 39 shots. They had so many injuries, so many guys hurt. They played Tampa Bay in the middle of the day on a Monday, and they won that game. And that game, that one was where I think it kind of turned things around. The rest of that road trip, they started to get some optimism. But March was the month where they turned around. March was a very good month for the Predators in the grand scheme of things. February, this team was literally unwatchable. I went to the game the day before Valentine's Day. And there couldn't have been more than 3,500 people in the building. And they booed them off the ice after the second period. I mean, booed. Like, it was loud. And so, yeah, that team was unwatchable. And I think John Hines deserves credit for the fact that that team was unwatchable. And the other thing, too, and I'm not here to knock Laviolette, because you all know how much I like Laviolette. But when Laviolette left Carolina, they were bad for a while after he left. When Laviolette left Philadelphia, they were bad for a while after he left. It's hard to say that they've been bad, because they technically made the playoffs last year, and they made the playoffs this year. And I think that is a tribute to Hines coaching as well. What else is in there?
Donovan texted in and said, I love the roster. I love the guys that fight, that are tough and get themselves in front of the net. Love the scrappers. Love this lineup.
Yeah, so I don't think you win a cup because of your scrappers. I mean, I love that fourth line too. But the second that it becomes time to pay Tanner Janot, it's time to get rid of Tanner Janot. This is what I thought about. Tell me if I'm crazy with this thought. Going back to the scrappers, Austin Watson played a very similar role the year that they went to the Cup and the following year. And I think at some point they gave Austin Watson last year a contract extension, which I was against for a couple of reasons. But the biggest being that I don't think you need to pay that guy. I certainly don't think you need to draft that guy in the first round. Tanner Janot, Matthew Olivier, those kind of guys, you love them. But once you pay those guys, you start to hate them. Because they don't produce for you the same way that they were producing when they were young and hungry, because they're the physical guys that fight, that hit, that, you know, all that kind of stuff. If he's talking about guys like Eric Halla, then maybe I'm there. Like, I think that Eric Halla is very underrated in terms of, once it feels like he settled into the system and started to gel with the team, I think he had a nice impact on this group. Luke Cunningham, when he got back from being hurt, I think he had a good impact on this group. And if you want to sell me around, you know, a young core, which includes Cunningham, who I believe is 23, then okay. But those fourth line guys, what, you don't pay those guys. You do what you did at Colton Sissons, which is a two-way guy who can play, you know, on your penalty kill. He's a bottom six forward. He's consistent. You can move him around. You can move him to center position. You can move him to the wing, whatever. That guy, $2 million a year, fine. But you do not pay the scrappers that everybody loves. That's not how you build this. So I disagree with that. But the mentality of the team, the sacrifice of the team, those are the things that should get the coach recognized.
Neil texted in and said, if the last game is any indication, Fabro is not playing in game one. Benning and either Harper or Branson will be the third D pair.
I don't know how you sell that to Dante Fabro. I don't know how you literally do that. And then I think he's a restricted free agent at the end of the year. He's eligible for the expansion draft. I don't know how you, even if it's for the good of the team, even if it's, well, you know, we want, you know, a right shot, a left shot, want, you know, I don't know how you sell that to Dante Fabro, because he knows he's better than those guys. And the second that you start talking to Dante Fabro about, well, right shot, left shot, the second you start to do that to a 22-year-old first-round pick is probably the second I feel like you start to lose him. And I just don't think you can take that risk. I don't think that – this goes back to the trade deadline, right? If the Predators had been offered a first-round pick for Mikhail Granlund, they would have made the deal, right?
Mm-hmm.
But no one's going to offer a first-round pick for Granlund. Fabro's a first-round pick. If you are so hell-bent on winning this series – that you're willing to burn a bridge with Fabro. And I don't know Fabro very well, but it's a hard sell to a 22-year-old. Like, would it not be hard if the Titans made it to the Super Bowl and I said, hey, Caroline, we're going to leave you at home and I'm going to go pick up TD and I'm going to take him with me for Super Bowl week, because, I mean, it's Teron Davenport and he would be better to have talk about the Titans for the whole week of the Super Bowl. How would you feel about it?
Well, I wouldn't be pleased, but it's TD.
Right, but my guess is that would really bother you.
Yeah, it would bother me, for okay. Sure. But if you're going to say, we're going to pick up someone else who we don't know or has less experience than you do or whatever it was, I'd be really freaking pissed.
So someone who you think you're better than.
Yes. I don't think I'm better than TD.
So TD's TD great. May be a bad example, but like that's what you're doing. And they can sugarcoat it however they want to sugarcoat it. They can say all the right things. I think you lose Fabro if you do this to him. I think you lose him. And this is a kid that you were so desperate to bring in a couple years ago. So you're going to use a first-round pick. Think about this. You're going to trade Sam Girard because you say, hey, we've got Dante Fabro waiting in the wings once he, you know, signs from Boston College or whatever, Boston University. Once he signs from Boston University, he's our guy, so we can trade Sam Girard. You trade Sam Girard. Then you bring in Fabro. You're out of defenseman after Fabro. You got nothing. Now, Carrier, luckily, seems like a hit. But you've got nothing after Fabro. You trade P.K. Subban because you're banking on Fabro. Then you basically force yourself to get rid of him because you thought maybe Eric Branson gave you a better chance to win a playoff series. Does anybody else think about how stupid that sounds? So, to me, if they bench Fabro, and I said this, if they bench Fabro, someone's losing their job. When I say someone, I'm probably talking about Fabro because he's probably going to be on another team next year. But I don't know how you sell this to Fabro that, hey, that these coaches really believe in you if they're playing Eric Goodbranson over you. I do not know how you sell that. And that is going to be something that I would not, if I ran this team, not owned it, but if I was the general manager, I would say Dante Fabro plays. Because I can't bench Dante Fabro and then try to explain it to Dante Fabro that it's not, we think Eric Goodbranson or we think Matt Benning is better than you. Because even though Fabro makes a bunch of mistakes, Fabro makes way too many mistakes for me. Even though he does that, he's 22. And you've invested a lot into him. You've banked a lot on him. He's a part of your future. So either you should have traded him at the second that you realize you could live without him, you should have traded him. And then you would have gotten something in return and it wouldn't have looked desperate. This, I'd be careful. I'd be careful if I were the Predators. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Caroline's is coming up next. Caroline thought she'd take some easy bets, but it didn't work out very well for her. We'll get to that next. Stillman and Company, CSPN 1025, the game. Caroline Fenton thought she was going to get nice and funny yesterday on Caroline's and try to even the score by taking obvious winners. Good call on the Toronto Maple Leafs money line against the terrible Ottawa Senators.
I knew it, too. I texted Ryan Porth, who has said, no, never again, never betting on the Ottawa Senators again. I said, I feel bad about this. I don't want to do it, but I have to. I should have just stayed away. I should have listened to Ryan Porth. I should have stayed away.
Good call on the Yankees minus 1.5.
I should have just stuck with the money line, too.
Yankees won,
I wrote
nothing.
Down Yankees money line. And then I thought, no, let's get fun. Let's get cute. Let's do Yankees minus 1.5. Yankees won by 1.
Also, yesterday, your Mariners under 7.5. The judges ruled that's no longer allowed. But you can get 2 points for a parlay.
Okay.
So, you can get 2 points for a parlay.
Okay,
but
like
you
it.
Can't do that bull crap under 7.5 runs.
They're prop bets. They're legit.
Now, judges ruled. It's time now for Caroline's.
Get in on the action. Put the money on the mahogany. What's on tap on the sports books? It's time to break it all down with Caroline's. Here on Stillman & Company.
On ESPN.
102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app.
Let me tell the fine folks out there, the record this week is yours truly, 12-5, and Caroline's is 9-8. So we got some work to do.
Yeah, I'm aware. I would like to, for the record, to show that I made riskier bets and won those bets, and you made not as risky bets, and also won those bets, but like I
nobody cares about strength of schedule.
I won more.
Nobody cares about
they
strength of schedule.
They were quality losses, if I'm going to take a word from the College Football Playoff Committee. But I feel better about today. We're going to bounce back from yesterday. The Yankees and the Leafs really letting me down. Rockies, Reds, I'm also going to go against Ryan Porth. Yet again, I'm going to take the Rockies money line plus 124. So Luis Castillo is pitching for the Reds, and he's 1-6 in games. The Reds are 1-6 when he pitches. He has a 6.51 ERA and gave up 5 hits in 33 innings this season. The Rockies just snapped a 5-game losing streak last night against the Padres, so feeling good. Kind of going into this game, just snapped a losing streak, feeling themselves, going against a pitcher with a 6.5 ERA. Now, the Rockies pitcher, Chichi Gonzalez, he has a 5.74 ERA, so not great. Not great.
I don't know where you got 5.74 from. I got 5.97.
Okay, well, five something. I got 5.74.
I am going to take the Reds, and here's why I'm going to take the Reds' money line here, because one, the Rockies are a terrible team right now. I mean, they are terrible. But they're going to Coors Field, and the Reds have got some home run hitters right now. Eugenio Suarez, I think, had a huge extra inning bases-clearing double yesterday. He's got 6 home runs on the season. Nick Castellanos hits a high fly ball deep into left field, and he's got 9 home runs on the season. I'm very sorry.
The drive in a deep left field, that'll be a home run. That'll make it a 4-0 ball game.
Jesse Winker's got 7 home runs. So you're taking the Reds, a better team. You're taking the Reds into Coors Field. The Reds are hitting home runs. I'm going to take the Reds tonight. Reds on the money line. What's the point line here, or the run line, or whatever they call it in baseball?
I will check.
I think I may take, if it's like 1.5, I think I may take the Reds in that regard. You talk about the pitching matchup, and as if the Reds starter is so terrible, Luis Castillo. But he had a good year last year, and is not a bad pitcher. I mean, again, you're talking about a 6.42 ERA versus a 5.97. I'm going to take the Reds minus 1.5. Give
That's
me the Reds.
That's what I like to hear.
Minus 1.5, make it a little harder on myself. No
Look
interest
you being
in the
risky.
Rockies. Thank you.
Proud of you.
What's next?
Kings, Grizzlies. I'm taking the Kings money line, mostly because Jonas Valanciunas is questionable tonight. He's had a shoulder injury, I think. Buddy Hield also has an ankle issue. Kings player, but he's probable for tonight, so feel better about him playing tonight over Jonas Valanciunas. Memphis has already clinched their play-in spot, but the Kings are battling to secure that 10th spot so they can play in. They're battling the Spurs in the Eastern Division, and the Kings have also won 6 of their last 7. So, the Grizzlies are kind of battling for that spot so they can get home court advantage in the playoffs, but they're already in. The Kings need to get in, and I feel like this is going to be a game tonight where they secure their play-in spot.
Did I read this correctly? We're going to get Grizzlies-Warriors as a play-in game?
Are the Warriors in the play-in tournament?
I think
I didn't know that.
Now, I'm not Mr. NBA, but we could have something great with that. I'm going to take the Kings plus 8, and here's how I'm taking the Kings plus 8. I think Grizzlies are going to win. But 8 points is too much for me in a basketball game, and to your point, it means more for the Kings than it does for the Grizzlies. Mm-hmm. So this kind of covers my butt, even if the Grizzlies win. So I'm going to take the Kings plus eight here. I was probably going to take the Grizz minus eight until you brought the fact that the Kings need a win. The Kings have had some injuries. The Kings kind of stink. So I'm going to try to cover my butt here. I think the Grizzlies will win close. So I'm going to take the plus eight here.
You are right that there will be a Warriors-Grizzlies play-in tournament. And I think I said Eastern Conference. I meant Western Conference.
Is that a one-game take-all?
I really don't know.
You worked at ESPN?
Well, the play-in tournament's new.
I know, but still. But that sounds like, I'm not a huge basketball guy, like an NBA guy. I find the NBA to be really boring, and I find the players to be babies. That, Ja Morant and the Grizzlies versus Steph Curry and the Warriors.
Oh, give me that all day.
That's worth
Andrew
watching.
Andrew Wiggins, give me that.
What's next?
We have Blues Wild taking the Wild money line.
Dean Evason.
So the Blues won 4-0 last night, and they're both clinched. They're both in the playoffs. This game means essentially nothing. But I think the Wild are going to be looking for a win, you know, come back from that 4-0 kind of embarrassing loss going into the playoffs. Like, let's get one more win under our belts, get some good motivation going into the playoffs. And the Wild have a really good road record. They're 14-9-3 on the road, and the Blues have kind of struggled in St. Louis. They're 10-11-5 this season at home. Kaprizov is just, for the Wild, has just been on fire this year, 51 points in 54 games, and he is the front runner for the Rookie of the Year. So I feel good about the Wild going into St. Louis.
I'm going to take the Blues. And here's why I'm going to take the Blues. The Blues are one of those teams, kind of like the Predators, but they weren't as bad, but really got it together there at the end of the season. Mm-hmm. I mean, really got their you-know-what together. And I think that they're trying to sell this in the room, you know, hey, let's carry this into the playoffs. So I'm going to take the Blues on the money line here. I just don't think the Wild are as good of a team.
You don't think the Wild are better than the Blues?
I think the Blues are one of those teams get hot. They got a playoff caliber goalie. They're getting hot at the right time. I'm going to take the Blues. You know, every now and then, and I think Dean Evason is a great coach. But I am not a huge believer in this Minnesota Wild group. But wow. You know me. I do love Dean Evason now. I am a Dean Evason.
And you know me.
Fan.
I do love my Blues.
But I'm going against Dean Evason. Okay, I've got one.
All right, let's hear it.
That I want to get into, and it's baseball, and it's basically straight up a pick'em. The A's and the Red Sox.
Whoa.
Sean Manaea on the road against Garrett Richards. I think Sean Manaea is the perfect pitcher to go into Fenway Park. By the way, former Nashville Sound Sean Manaea. Left-handed pitcher against those Red Sox hitters. The Red Sox have been swinging the bats this year, but the A's have a really good team. I like the A's with that right-handed power they have in the order, whether it's Matt Chapman or Matt Canha, or I think Matt Olson's right-handed as well. I mean, they've got a lot of right-handed hitters. That monster, I think they're going to play with it. I think Sean Manaea is a better pitcher than Garrett Richards, even though Garrett Richards has been better as of late, started the season pretty terribly, but he's okay. I'm going to go with the A's today. Again, it's a pick'em. I'm going to go with the A's money line over the Red Sox.
I'm going to take the Red Sox money line, and here is why. Boston has some sluggers on that team. They're one of the best hitting teams in the league.
Sure.
Don't know much about the pitching matchup, but I just know I feel good about the Red Sox offense.
You took the Red Sox earlier this week.
I did, but that doesn't scare me away.
There you go.
Look out, world.
Those are Caroline's. Let's see if she can get back in the game or if I'm going to be resting my starters tomorrow at the end of the first week. We'll see. That I don't know. You know who never rests their starters? Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. They bring out the best when they come to take care of your home, and I know that because they take great care of my home. And they are proud supporters of the Nashville Predators. Nobody is going to be cheering on harder than my man, Mr. Hiller. That's right. That Hiller logo is right there on the ice because Hiller is proud to be supporters of the Nashville Predators. Tax credits for energy-efficient home systems are back this year. When you put an Energy Star certified equipment in your home, you will earn a tax credit with the IRS. And this month, Hiller is doubling your tax credit by putting more money in your pocket when you purchase select new HVAC systems or tankless water heaters. And they're offering special financing, so you make no payments until next year. Visit happyhiller.com for all of the details. As always, happy you'll be here. The service is free. Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical, proud supporter of the Vols and the Preds. Hiller, call the Happy Face Truck today. Philbin and Company. We will have tons of coverage tomorrow and, of course, leading up into Game 1 on Monday night, Preds and Canes. Get excited for that. Hey, Nashville Sounds Baseball is on ESPN 94.9. Tonight, the Sounds take on the Memphis Redbirds at First Horizon Park. Pregame 6:20, first pitch 6:35. Sounds Baseball on ESPN 94.9, presented by Farm Bureau Health Plans and 312 Pizza. Matthias Ekholm joined us on the show, Preds defenseman, earlier today, and we hit all the topics about the series with Carolina and, of course, the season the Predators had. And for Matthias Ekholm, it was kind of an interesting year, considering the fact that, well, he was considered to be on the move to everybody who needed a defenseman. Boston, Philly, Winnipeg, you name it. They were considering trading for Matthias Ekholm. How did he deal with it? Here's what Matthias Ekholm said.
Yeah, it was not a first, but it was a new thing for me in my career. I've not been involved in a whole lot of trade rumors or trade talks whatsoever up until this point, but when things doesn't go your way or things doesn't go the way the team wants to, there's going to be consequences from that. So I understand all that business part of it. And it was hard in the beginning, seeing all that and hearing all that. It's hard to just kind of shut it down, so to speak. And I think it was me and my wife had this discussion about the whole thing, and it was like a month to go till the deadline, and we knew that if we keep playing bad, these rooms are just going to pile up. So there's no reason to even listen to them. Just kind of control what you can control. Go out there, play your game. But in this instance, in my game, just worry about that. Focus on that, and that's kind of the way I approached it. It sounds odd in the team sport, and everyone probably reads the articles, everybody sees all that, but sure. I never lost belief in this team. I don't think the other guys did either. It was never a place or a time where we'd like discuss this as a possibility that I wouldn't stay here. And I think that's just what we did. We just stuck with it and controlled what we can control. And obviously we know, I believe in this group 110%, and I think we've really shown that as of late, and I'm really happy the way things turned out.
So Matthias Ekholm doesn't get traded. Team turns it around, very happy. The team was somewhat turning it around, still technically out of a playoff spot when they got to the trade deadline. David Poile didn't make a deal, didn't pull a trigger. So I asked Matthias Ekholm, how much of a shot in the arm did that give this group?
Yeah, that's huge. That's what you want to hear from your management. I mean, I think everyone in the room, player-wise and coach-wise, knew we were going to turn it around. We knew we believe in these guys and the core of the team. And it's obviously sometimes you know that in this salary cap world and all the, draft picks and everything that can come back, we never know what management would do. But to hear that from the general manager was obviously huge at the time, and we really all just ran with that.
And so far, it looks to have paid off. Now, as Adam Vingan wrote at The Athletic, he thinks that the Predators need to make it at least past the first round in order to justify that decision. But anything can happen in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Meanwhile, I asked him about fans in the stands because, again, they've increased capacity to 12,000. So 12,000 will be at Bridgestone Arena Plus for the first time since March 5th of last year. They'll have 12,000 people in the building. And the Predators get set to take on Carolina. Maybe they win a game there. Who knows? But what's it like for one of the guys that was part of the 2017 team to know that there are going to be more fans at Bridgestone Arena next Friday night for game number 3?
Yeah, it gives me chills just like when you're saying that. Like, it's awesome. I mean, I think just having fans back again this year, just when it started and it was kind of like 1,500 and it increased to 3,000 or whatever, makes such a huge difference. I remember we had like 3,500 in the stands, and then we went to Chicago for a couple of games, and there was zero there. It's just such a big difference when you can get that in. It gets a lot more emotion to the game. I feel like it brings a lot more excitement to the game. And obviously, I think for us, as you're saying, it can go two ways when you have fans in there. But as of right now, the way we're rolling with the team, and we're just feeding off the crowd, and to know that we're going to put 5,000 more fans in there from where it was against Carolina here those last couple of games, it's awesome. It's a great feeling. And as you're saying, my focus is more again on game one than it is on game three. But you know that that's coming, and it's super exciting. That's all I can say. I'm really looking forward to it.
I'll say this. I do think that that's the one thing that the team is telling themselves is, hey, if we win one, we get to go to Bridgestone Arena at a capacity for game three.
And that takes off so much pressure later on in the series.
Just especially if you get game one.
Oh, yeah. Get game one. If you drop game two, you are looking at two games at home in a more packed Bridgestone Arena, which makes a huge difference, as we just heard.
I do wonder, though, you know, could we be putting too much stock into that? You know, Crispy was saying, hey, just steal one on the road. That's what I've said. They have to take one. They got to take one. They got to take one against Carolina. If they take the one against Carolina, then whatever happens, I hope it's game one, because then game two, they get all the pressure, especially if the Predators get a lead in game two, and then it's like, oh my goodness, could the Predators go in there and take both of them, which we saw them do in 2017 against the Blackhawks. Tall order. But game one, I mean, I look at the two games in Carolina, and I say, hey, nothing to lose. Go out there and steal one. But I think it's kind of one of those ones where if they do take it, then all the pressure shifts the other way. That's going to do it for us. We are out of here. We'll be back tomorrow with a Fireball Hot Take Friday at 2 o'clock. ESPN Radio coming up next. We will have tons of coverage tomorrow and, of course, Monday, leading up to game number one between the Predators and the Carolina Hurricanes. Stillman and company, we'll see you tomorrow at 2.